Aretas pulled Poulin's Mercedes into an alley. The SUV was there, and Renault was waiting. Poulin glanced up as it started to rain.
I need to get some equipment.
No, you do not leave my sight. You do not disappear. You do not run your own operation. You stick with us, or we put you in the ground like the note said.
Poulin met the Frenchman's stare, but detected no deception, just his own worry and suspicion. The soldier wanted to fetch a full payload of armor and weapons, but he could not afford a fight with his tenuous allies. This day, it was going to be done the French way.
We're going to need guns.
That I can do.
They got out into the rain, and Renault popped the hatchback of the Renault. Blankets were piled in the back. Aretas yanked off the top covering. Poulin stared. Three 1928 Thompson submachine guns stared back at him.
They are former Paraguayan police issue. Reported stolen years ago, untraceable.
Renault took up one of the ancient weapons. He gave Poulin his movie star handsome grin.
Like the Untouchables, no?
Aretas picked up one of the submachine guns.
You know which end is which?
Poulin took up the heavy wooden steel weapon. Fully loaded, it was twice as heavy as an M16. The stock and foregrip were worn, and much of the finish was gone. He racked the action and noted its liquid smoothness. He inserted a drum and racked the action again to load around. The weapon was well used, but had been meticulously maintained. Poulin shook his head. Action Direct agents had a reputation for being cowboys. The reputation was well deserved.
I'm familiar with it.
Aretas looked derisively at the doctor.
Yeah.
He threw back a blanket and revealed another dinosaur.
Here is your MAS-49.
Poulin took up the battered old semi-automatic rifle and examined it. He picked up an ancient-looking belt of rubberized canvas with six magazine pouches. Poulin checked the sights on his weapon. It was archaic, but arguably it would be harder to think of a better weapon for clearing rooms full of entranced, suicidal Javanese martial artists. Poulin picked up a battered-looking gas mask bag that contained two more drums.
Anything else?
Renault yanked another blanket away to reveal a white plastic 5-gallon bucket. It was full to the rim with the brutally knobbed shapes of U.S. military pineapple grenades.
Argentine army surplus. Take as many as you want.
It turned out that tracking down their informant wasn't hard at all. Getting him to talk was another matter.
How many?
The French agent backhanded the Javanese gangster before he could speak, and the man collapsed to the muck of the alley. Renault yanked him up, and Aretas buried his fist into the gangster's guts.
How many, Munep? And where?
Aretas grinned as the man folded in half and dropped to the ground again. Poulin had been on both ends of some very ugly interrogations. Either way, it was a rotten experience. Aretas was enjoying the proceedings, just a little too much. The Javanese quarter in Cayenne was small and full of immigrants from neighboring Suriname who came to find work as fishermen and dock workers. Like all immigrants, they brought their criminals with them. Munep Houbedun had a nasty reputation as a leg breaker, which he backed up with his ancestral martial arts. A few thousand volts from Renault's stun gun had taken the fight out of him. Renault smiled unpleasantly at Poulin.
Do you want to eat him, monsieur?
Hurry it up.
Americans, all business.
Aretas put his foot in Houbedun's crotch and leaned.
Well, and how many?
Munep's limbs still trembled and twitched from the voltage he'd taken.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Think very hard. Someone as my boss. I think you know who. Last chance, and then I'm going to stop crushing your balls and start cutting them.
Renault made a show of reloading a fresh pair of probe cartridges into the stun gun.
Maybe he just needs some more juice.
Or maybe we should just give him to the American. He is all business, after all.
I was told to keep a lookout on the street and report anything I saw.
Like what?
Police, searching the waterfront, or asking questions. Or strangers.
Who gave you these orders?
Stop it! Stop it!
Bolin gauged the fear in the man's eyes and saw he was telling the truth.
Who's Naga?
Ingabahi Bagus, a drug dealer and a pimp. Scum. He has an import-export business which fronts Guyana marijuana into Europe and then imports heroin. If you want Asian girls, he brings them in from Suriname. He's a small fish, but he rules his own little kingdom in the Javanese Quarter. He pays protection to the French syndicate in Paris and pays off the local police regularly. As long as he keeps his crimes in the Javanese community and his dirty work in Suriname, no one bothers him.
Then let's go bother him.
Aretas yanked Hubanen to his feet. He shoved his face into the gangster's and grinned like a wolf.
Time to go report, soldier. Not much on the outside.
Aretas stared out the rain-spattered windshield at the corrugated iron wall with a single door.
They say the inside is a veritable pleasure dome. They also say that the cellars below are a tomb of horrors.
Bolin had seen many such places. Far too many.
What does Naga look like?
Short, fat, head like a bullet. Scars under and over his left eye. Gold teeth. Tattoos. If you see someone who looks like a cartoon character of an Asian gangster, it is Naga.
Let's do it.
Aretas turned to Hubaden and unlocked his handcuffs.
Okay. You're going to go knock on the door. We're going to be right here across the street. If you screw up, the three of us cut you in two. After we move in, you are allowed to run for your life and keep running. All the way back to Suriname. Understand?
The man glanced warily at Bolin. He had met the executioner's gaze for only a moment, and what he had seen there had left his insides like ice water. He gazed out unhappily at the rain and nodded.
Good boy.
Aretas prodded him with the muzzle of the Thompson. Hubaden stepped out of the SUV and walked like a man going to his own funeral. Bolin flicked off the safety of his Thompson and kept the muzzle trained on Hubaden's back. The gangster went up to the door and pressed the button on the intercom. The door cracked open. Aretas stomped the accelerator to the floor. The SUV tore around in a tight arc and forward for the front door. Hubaden turned and had but a split second to gape in betrayal and horror. The man who answered the door was smashed back as the frame ripped out of the doorway. Roland stepped on the brakes. The interior of the warehouse was done up like a pasha's palace. Opulent batik prints stretched across the cavernous interior from the ceiling to the floor. The floors were covered with expensive Persian rugs. Carvings of gold, ebony, ivory, and jade were everywhere. Potted trees rose to the skylights amid fountains. Bolin had no time to admire the decor. Bolin bolted out of the SUV with his Thompson leveled. Two Javanese men reclined on cushions smoking a hookah. Half-naked Asian women sat at their feet. The stems of the gangsters' water pipes dangled in their hands.
What?
Too late, they reached for the AK-74 rifles by their knees. A door flung open at the far end of the pleasure dome. A bald, gold-toothed, scar-faced man, who could only be Naga, stared incredulously at the intruders in his parlor. Renault and Aretas turned their guns on the door. Two men with rifles appeared on the balcony above the private room. Bolin raised his aim. He hosed both down before either man got off a shot. Bolin moved to the door. He stepped to one side and put in a fresh drum. The soldier racked his bolt on a fresh round and took a grenade out of his pocket. He nodded at the room as he pulled the pin. The cotter lever pinged away as Bolin opened his hand and then closed it to make a fist around the grenade. Bolin turned to the door. He opened his hand and dropped the grenade on the floor within. Bolin drew out his arm and moved away. Bolin turned back and kicked the door. A man lay on the floor, clutching the ruins of his face. Another bloody human ruin lay unmoving on the blood-splattered carpets. A huge mahogany desk lay overturned in the corner. A man was crouching behind it. Bolin kept his sights on the center of the overturned table.
Come out, Naga.
The gangster rose slowly from behind the table. His left arm hung bloody and useless by his side. He dropped a Colt 45 pistol to the floor and raised his good hand pleadingly.
Épargnez-moi, s'il vous plaît. Vous avez fait sauter mon bureau.
Boland turned. The Frenchman's weapons were not quite pointing at him. Renault smiled in challenge.
He's a dead man anyway. No one fucks with Action Directe. As he starts the interrogation on the right foot.
Poulin scowled in revulsion as he guarded the door. Boland went over to Naga.
Tell me where she is, and I won't let them torture you.
Aretas and Renault lost their smiles. Dr. Poulin no longer guarded the door. The muzzle of his rifle was now pointing inside the room. Aretas shook his head slowly, but his eyes stayed locked with Boland as he spoke.
Poulin, I'm going to shove that rifle up your ass.
Try it.
The French agents exchanged a quick glance. Boland knew they were considering killing him and possibly the doctor as well.
Last chance, Naga, before this gets ugly.
Downstairs, she's alive, downstairs.
Anyone with her?
One guard.
Aretas broke eye contact with Boland. He strode forward and glared at Naga.
Are you sure?
One guard!
Good.
For God's sake!
Aretas took his time, clicking a fresh drum into his weapon, daring Boland to do something about it. The soldier was not going to buy into the power trip. Yet. He filed the Frenchman away as unfinished business and arranged a smile on his face.
So where's downstairs?
Aretas glanced around the room. Boland took over.
Poulin, you stick with me. We'll take the front. Roland, you and Alain take the back. We search every square inch of the place.
The agents began yanking down tapestries and ripping up rugs. Poulin looked thoughtfully at the walls. Boland did some mental math. The building was a converted warehouse. It was a box. The cellar would most likely be new construction. If there were a hidden door rather than a floor hatch, there would be an inconsistency in the interior.
There.
Boland walked across the office. The room was smaller on the inside than it should have been. The carpet was slightly worn in front of one wall section, but there was no visual reason for foot traffic in front of an empty wall. Boland tapped on the section of wall with his knuckles. The panel smashed inward off of its track to reveal a narrow stairwell. Renault pushed forward. He flicked on the light at the top of the stairs and shouted.
Throw down your weapon! Come out! You will not be armed!
Don't shoot!
A Javanese came up the stairs slowly. He was a big man, but he wasn't key. The guard glanced fearfully from muzzle to muzzle of the weapons covering him. Renault drove the barrel of his Thompson into the man's gut as he reached the top, and then shoved him to the floor of the office. Aretas patted him down. He tossed the man's knife in a corner.
Poulin, cover him!
Poulin turned his rifle on the man.
Jolie! Jolie!
Jolie?
Don't!
Most of Renault's head was torn away in a hailstorm of lead, brain, and bone and splattered the concrete wall behind him. Upstairs, Boland snapped the glance backward. The gangster on the office floor, finished playing possum, had bounced up like a jumping jack. He had taken Poulin's bullet and then kicked the rifle out of his hands. In the blink of an eye, the Javanese delivered three martial arts hand strikes that drove Poulin to the floor. Boland dropped his submachine gun and pulled a grenade from his pocket. If the cellar was a single room, the woman would be within the lethal radius of the grenade. He would have to cut it close. He stepped away from the stairwell as he pulled the pin and waited. Aretas brought his Thompson to bear as the big Javanese lunged at him. Two bullets smashed into the guard's chest. The man's kick smashed off the Thompson's foregrip and broke Aretas' wrist. The kick bent back the drum at a horrible angle that jammed the feed. The guard's fist pistoned into Aretas' throat. The gangster spun for Boland. The Beretta 93R drilled a three-round burst into his chest. The killer stared down stupidly at the bleeding holes in his chest as Boland raised his aim to the man's head. Boland raced airwell. Ki Gunung flew up out of the stairwell like winged vengeance. He vaulted over the bodies of his two men who had taken the majority of the shrapnel on the narrow stairs. Blood streaked his chest and face, and his empty hands were torn where he had not entirely avoided the flying fragments. Key's kick hit him square in the chest. Bolin staggered back. Froth flecked the corners of Key's mouth, and his eyes rolled back in his head as he spun. The edge of his foot came around in a blinding arc and chopped the 93R out of Bolin's hand. The executioner put up his hands to block, and the next kick flew in beneath his guard and thundered into his gut. His blocking arm went numb as Key's next kick tried to crush his skull. Key was a martial artist, nearly from birth, and he was deep in his trance. Bolin knew he stood no chance in hand-to-hand combat, but he fought on. He stabbed his fingers for Key's eyes and was rewarded by a deadly kick that missed by inches. Bolin tried to cover as Key's blows fell like rain. Only the soldier's body armor prevented his ribs from caving in. His arms turned to aching lead as they absorbed the blows meant for his brain. Key leaped into the air. The flying kick took Bolin off his feet and bounced him off the far wall of the office. He forced his brutalized body to move. Key bent and picked up the dagger on the floor. Key stood between the executioner and the firearms. Aretas pushed himself up from the floor. His face was a mask of agony as he held his broken wrist up to his throat. His right hand clutched his stun gun. He glared at Key as the ruby beam of the laser sight whined into life. Aretas held down the trigger and drained the battery pack into it. Key seized the wires and ripped the probes from his body. He closed the gap between himself and Aretas in two strides. Bolin pulled his last grenade from his pocket as he lunged after Key. Aretas tried to bring up his hands as Key attacked. Key's foot smashed the agent's arms back into his face. Key whirled as he sensed Bolin behind him. The two men's attacks spun into each other. The entranced Javanese made no attempt to block. His foot scythed for Bolin's head. The big American held the pineapple grenade in his open right fist. His blow swung around in a brutal arc like a ball and chain. The crenellated steel sphere of the fragmentation grenade crunched into Key's temple. Key's kick struck Bolin's blocking arm a split second later and staggered him halfway across the room. Bolin kept his feet. He steadied himself and staggered back to the fray with the bloody grenade in his hand. The soldier brought the grenade up overhead and smashed it into the crown of Key's skull. Key fell on his face. Bolin put the grenade back in his pocket and bent woodenly to retrieve his Beretta.
Poulain, you all right?
The left side of Poulain's face was grotesquely swollen. He nodded, and even that effort seemed to hurt him. The doctor looked about painfully for his rifle.
Roland?
Aretas sat collapsed against the wall. Blood poured down the back of his head. His left forearm was broken in two places.
Fils du putain!
Bolin smiled tiredly. If the Frenchman could use foul language, he could breathe. The soldier picked up his fallen Thompson.
Roland, you and Poulain hold the fort up here. I'm going down. If anyone besides me or Jolie comes up the stairs, shoot them.
Aretas nodded and grimaced as he took the pistol in his good hand. Bolin nodded at Poulain.
Watch the door.
Poulain sat wearily next to Aretas and aimed his rifle. Bolin picked his way over the bodies of the two dead gangsters on the stair. Renault lay at the foot of the stairwell. Key's shotgun blast had decapitated him. Bolin picked up the shotgun and entered the cellar. It was a fairly spacious room. Chains and shackles were bolted to the concrete walls. A twisted, all-stainless steel version of a dentist's chair dominated the room. It had multiple restraints and could be adjusted into numerous positions. The stains on the floor and the stench of human suffering testified to what sort of things went down in the concrete hell below the earth. Ugly implements of torture lay arranged on wheeled trays, as well as a pair of video cameras. There were two doors off to the side. Jolie's torn clothes were tossed in a corner. The first cell was empty. In the second, Jolie Eryulene lay naked upon the floor. Her nose was bleeding, and her left eye was swollen shut. Bolin knelt.
Are you all right?
I do not wish to speak of it.
Bolin quickly checked her over. The lack of outward damage implied they had not gotten to inflicting any serious injuries yet. She shook uncontrollably, but her good eye blazed at Bolin.
Don't let my men see me like this.
Bolin collected her garments. He pulled off his jacket and wrapped it around her shoulders as she struggled to pull on her torn clothes. Bolin handed her the fallen shotgun.
How's that?
Better.
She suddenly became aware of Reynaud's body at the foot of the stairs.
Roland?
He's injured, but alive. Poulain is with him.
Bernard?
He insisted on coming to rescue you.
Oh, he's a fool.
You have that effect on men, I've noticed.
She smiled weakly. Bolin jerked his head toward the stairs.
Let's get you out of here.
Safe in his hotel room, Bolin rubbed his own aching arms and ribs. The bruises had turned an ugly black. He didn't want to think about his face. He decided it was as good a time as any to report into Stony Man Farm.
What's the news, Stryker?
Roland is pretty banged up. Dr. Poulain has a concussion. They're keeping him under medical observation at the hospital.
Gotta take care of France's best brain.
Kurtzman was clearly more concerned about Bolin.
How are you?
Been worse. Massive contusions, the usual. Breathing is fun.
Tomorrow, it's going to be a barrel of laughs.
How is Jolie?
I don't know. She's not talking. She went into professional mode and is busying herself with her men. There were no signs of significant physical torture, but there are worse things you can do to a woman than jumper cables and pliers.
What did you learn?
Not much. Key is dead. That he was involved with Javanese gangsters in French Guiana isn't a surprise, and we didn't take any prisoners. We took casualties. As a rescue, it was a success. As a hard probe, it was a failure. We didn't learn anything, and we lost another day. Did you come up with anything?
I got some of the lowdown on Dr. Mohammed Khani.
What did you get?
You were right on the money. Maresta Mohammed Khani emigrated from Iran with her parents, Jafar and Marion Mohammed Khani, to France when she was 17. Both of her parents were engineers, her father chemical, and her mother civil. She and her parents became French citizens. France granted them dual citizenship. Iran doesn't recognize
them. What's the status on her parents now?
Both are alive and solid citizens. Jafar retired from the petrochemical business and teaches at the Polytechnical School. Marion worked for the Parisian city government.
Bolin considered the coldness he'd seen in Dr. Mohammed Khani's gray eyes.
And what about their daughter?
Child prodigy. They wanted Foresta to have education and employment opportunities she wouldn't have access to in an Iran under the Ayatollah. She graduated at the top of her class in the last year of middle school, then enrolled in the Polytechnical School. She got her degree in aerospace and systems engineering, again at the head of her class.
Give me something I can use, Bear.
Things start to get interesting. Foresta got involved in political activity at university.
What kind of political activity?
Anti-American, anti-Israeli. Spoke at rallies and was arrested twice at protests outside the U.S. Embassy, bricks in hand. She also helped organize Muslim militants, both on and off campus. The French police investigated her on a weapons charge, but it was dropped, probably because her parents were wealthy, high profile, and very useful citizens of France. But it was enough for Israeli intelligence to keep a passive tab on her activities.
What happened?
Her political activity seems to have tapered off as she went on to get her advanced degrees and specialized in rocket science. She went to work for the space program after earning her doctorate.
Okay, so where does Israeli intelligence come into the picture?
They considered assassinating her.
Really?
The Israelis were following up on a lead they had on Iraqi intelligence activity. That lead led to Paris. It appears Iraqi agents contacted Dr. Mohammed Khani in 1995 and again in 1997.
To help modify and upgrade their Scud missiles.
That's right. The first time the Israelis detected the contact, it sent up red flags. The second time, they had a team on a flight to Paris ready to go and punch her clock.
What stopped them?
They believe she refused to help the Iraqis, though there seemed to be some dancing around the second time. That's when the hitmen got ready to deploy. Then the Iraqi agents left Paris without Dr. Mohammed Khani or any significant technical advisement or information. The hit was called off.
How does French intelligence feel about all this?
There's no indication that they know.
I think I'll just have to go have a talk with her.
Doesn't she think you're a pig?
I believe she considers me an ignorant, bigoted, Muslim-hating American pig.
Oh, well, Hell, you shouldn't have any trouble then.
In the home of Dr. Muhammad Khani, the ancient Indio servant looked at Boland dubiously. So did the two drooling French mastiffs flanking him. Boland had looked at himself in the mirror that morning. He wouldn't let anyone with a face like his through the front door either. He looked like he'd gone 15 rounds well out of his weight class. Boland's mashed lips made a dreadful attempt at a smile for the little man in the white house coat and sarong.
I'm expected.
The old Indio's almond eyes peered up at Boland critically.
Monsieur Cooper?
The same.
The man turned without a word. The dogs dropped into formation as the servant led Boland through a French colonial-style house. It had been beautifully restored and spartanly furnished with a tasteful mix of French and Persian antiques. The late afternoon heat was intense, but the house was perched right on the sea, and the ocean breeze stirred the long white curtains. They went out onto the veranda, and Boland kept the surprise off of his face. The servant bowed slightly.
Mademoiselle Muhammad Khani, your guest is arrived.
Dr. Muhammad Khani lay upon a deck chair, sunning herself. She turned large, dark sunglasses to regard Boland. She was wearing a black bikini, and her magnificent black hair cascaded past her shoulders. The tropical sun made her already olive complexion glow. She pulled down the dark glasses to reveal her startling gray eyes.
You are early.
Boland shrugged.
And you look like shit.
He cracked a smile through his mashed lips.
I suppose the state of your face has something to do with why Dr. Poulain is in hospital with a concussion?
The injuries are related.
If Dr. Poulain were not in hospital, and he had not called me personally this morning, told me what happened, and asked me to cooperate with you, I would have had Luke sick the dogs on you.
I'm glad you didn't.
I am still not sure if this is a good idea.
These are serious people, Doctor.
She was a beautiful woman, but her face could grow cold in an instant. She took off her sunglasses and turned her icy gaze on Boland.
So, am I a suspect?
My main one at the moment, at least on paper.
On paper?
Well, just on raw data. You're Iranian by birth. You've been involved in radical anti-American political movements in Paris, and you've been approached at least twice by the Iraqis to assist them in upgrading their ballistic missile systems.
She stiffened. He pressed his advantage home.
In 1997, the Israeli Mossad had a hit team on a flight to Paris to kill you.
Her face showed her alarm. Boland's instincts were correct. She hadn't known about her near brush with death.
On paper, you have the tools, talent, means, and motivation to make something unpleasant happen involving the Space Center. But in person, you don't give off the vibe.
Boland sat down on a chair and let the sun soak into his stiffened muscles.
Well, thank you, I suppose.
The scientist's face stayed hard, but her body relaxed slightly.
I will tell you something you may not know. My father fought in the Iran-Iraq war. He came back with mustard gas burns in his lungs. My brothers did not come back at all. My father told me to tell the Iraqis to go fuck themselves, and that is what I did.
You're a brave woman.
Thank you. But that still begs the question, what are you doing here?
I'm trying to put two and two together. Something terrible is about to happen. I don't know what it is, but I have to try to stop it. I can't leave any stone unturned. You respect Dr. Poulain?
He is a genius, and he has been my biggest sponsor. What exactly did you do that put him in hospital?
Boland decided to breach the security of Action Direct.
Agent Erolan was kidnapped.
Jolie? How? Why?
Muslim terrorists. Javanese. But I believe the cell operating in French Guiana goes far beyond the Javanese in South America. She was kidnapped in an attempt to take me off the investigation and hopefully get French intelligence to kill me.
How was Dr. Poulain involved?
I believe that both French intelligence and the Legion have been compromised here, which means the terrorists would have ears at the police as well. I gambled on trusting agents Aretos and Reno. Dr. Poulain volunteered to back me up.
You rescued Jolie?
We were successful, though Dr. Poulain was injured during the rescue. So was Roland. Alain didn't make it.
Jolie, I suppose she was suitably grateful.
Boland caught the vibe in her expression, but ignored it.
Who are you?
Someone trying to stop the massacre of innocents.
You really believe that the Space Center is somehow going to be involved in a terrorist attack?
I know it, but pieces are missing and I can't quite put the puzzle together. I'm trying to stop an atrocity, Foresta, and I know your instinct is to tell me to go stand in front of an Israeli tank, but this isn't an interrogation. Like I told Dr. Poulin, I was only hoping something you might suggest or might say unknowingly might help.
But I am still your number one suspect.
On paper, I said. In person, I'm not so sure anymore.
She stood. Her glossy black hair surged forward as she threw a long leg over Bolin and straddled his stomach.
If we are going to cooperate, you are going to have to be absolutely sure.
The good doctor leaned into Bolin, pulling him closer by pressing her hands against his back. She kissed him hard as Bolin's hands flowed to the string knot on the back of her bikini. Her hair swept against his face as the fabric of her swimsuit went slack, blowing gently in the ocean breeze.
Sleeping with the enemy?
Winning friends and gaining influence.
So what did you learn?
Not much in the way of hard data. Instinct-wise, I don't think she is directly involved in any kind of terrorist plot. But that doesn't mean she isn't being used, either with or without her knowing it. Or she may think she's involved in something else. Some of the things I told her shook her up. She says she wants to cooperate.
So Key's dead, and you bedded every woman with a top-secret clearance in French Guiana. Where does that leave us?
It leaves us with a space shot out of Kourou in 4 days, and I still have a really bad feeling about it.
Question is, what do you want to do about it? The French government isn't going to stop a space launch on our say-so, particularly when we have nothing to go on but your gut feeling. They're probably already ticked off with all our meddling.
Bolin knew he was right. With Key dead, French intelligence probably considered the matter closed. And even though Bolin had rescued Erylen, he had gotten one of their agents killed and risked one of France's top scientific minds. Action Direct and the French government probably didn't feel he had done them any favors. He'd exposed a mess and been a major source of embarrassment. It was only a matter of time before they had him officially booted out of French Guiana.
This all started with the Foreign Legion. That's what I'm going to have to go back to. Hopefully, Jolie will have something I can use regardless. I'm going to drop a dime on Commandant Marmion. I'll contact you when I have something.
All right, I'll keep working from my end.
Bolin clicked open his cell phone and punched the preset number.
Marmion?
Good evening, Commandant. I trust your friend Captain Cunningham contacted you yesterday.
Yes, he did. He said he does not completely understand what is going on, but that he has been assured by the highest levels of U.S. military that you are to be trusted, and that the security of both our nations is at risk. Something has happened. I think you should come here. And you should speak with Ilyanov.
I'm on my way.
At the jungle warfare training camp, the big Russian glared out the window of his tiny office into the inky blackness of the night.
As you know, I have been keeping track of Legionnaire Sahin and Attaché.
The Turk and the Algerian.
When a man joins the Legion, he is given the opportunity to change his identity.
So I've heard.
It is not like the old days, when rapists, murderers, or any scum with a price on his head could take the oath and disappear. We do background checks on any accepted applicant. This check is performed by Interpol. As you can imagine, many things are missed, but in some ways we do not care. If we find no glaring fault with you, your past is your past. It is your behavior while in the Legion that concerns myself and my branch the most.
I understand.
Nevertheless, I have dug into the past of every Muslim legionnaire in French Guiana. I myself am Jewish. I have a number of friends and relatives who have emigrated to Israel.
You have some connections in the Mossad.
Yes, I have called in favors, and I can tell you this. Corporal Rashid Attaché has a death sentence on his head. He has been involved with the jihad movement and the arming and equipping of terrorists in the Middle East. If Israeli intelligence can locate him, they will attempt to kill him.
And the Turk, Sahin?
Corporal Lala Sahin is not a Turk. He is a Kurd. He has been involved in terrorist bombing attacks in both Turkey and Iraq for the Free Kurdistan movement. Both countries wish him dead, and he fled his homeland to Egypt and then Saudi Arabia, where it seems he sold his talents to both Al-Qaeda and Islamic Jihad.
Bolin could see what was coming,
And where are Attaché and Sahin now?
Corporals Attaché and Sahin have been listed absent without leave since 0400 hours yesterday. However, I think I may have an idea of where they have gone.
And I'm invited?
Commandant Marmion has ordered me to extend the offer as professional courtesy.
Where are they?
There is a small mosque here in Cayenne. Both men had permission to attend services there when their schedules permitted.
Ilyanov pulled a map of the city from his pocket and spread it on the table. A red circle marked the mosque.
Here. According to informants, a man matching Sahin's description was seen in the vicinity of the mosque yesterday evening, in civilian clothing. Attaché has not been spotted. But if any of your suspicions have any ground, then this is where they will make contact with their confederates, one way or another.
We stake it out?
We eliminate it. Sahin, Attaché, and anyone who is helping them.
How soon?
Now.
The Legion took care of its own. It did not sound like Ilyanov cared about stopping terrorism. He wanted to avenge the honor of the Legion, and he probably didn't care how that affected Bolin's probe. The only way Bolin could influence the outcome was to go along.
Let's do it.
Are you armed?
The executioner felt the sudden urge to lie. He had surrendered his 93R and his knife at the gates to the camp. They had not been returned to him, but at the gate he had not turned out his pockets. He sat in the passenger seat of a civilian Peugeot. A caravan of three such vehicles wound their way through the streets of the capital. Each car was crammed with French Foreign Legion deep reconnaissance commandos. All of them wore civilian clothing.
No, I figured all I had was observer status.
Use this.
Ilyanov reached into a knapsack between his feet and pulled out a sound-suppressed Beretta 92G.
You are familiar with it?
I'm familiar with it.
This pistol is untraceable. If the situation goes out of control, dispose of it. You will be on your own.
I understand.
I am in total command. You are here as a courtesy.
I understand.
The car behind them peeled off down a side street as they approached the mosque. It was a small building with businesses on either side of it. It was 11 in the evening, and the businesses were all closed. There was no one on the street. Ilyanov nodded as he listened to his earpiece.
Flanking team is in position.
He brought the car to a halt across the street from the mosque.
Let's go.
The four of them went EVA. The four men from the other car got out, and Bolin's eyes narrowed as he saw Roland Aretas was one of them. The Action Direct agent's left arm was in a cast, and his face was still swollen. He carried a silenced Beretta low against his leg with his good hand. He seemed surprised to see Bolin, but acknowledged him with a nod. It seemed like all of France wanted payback on Attaché and Sahin. The assault team crossed the street and took the steps up to the mosque. Ilyanov tried the double doors and found them locked. They smashed inward as he put his foot into the lock. They fanned out into the mosque. The high-ceilinged building was dimly lit and seemed empty. Other than some low tables, the only furniture was the elevated pulpit where sermons were delivered to the faithful.
Lights!
Bolin kept one hand in his pocket and his pistol trained on a door in the back of the mosque. The executioner turned to face the now locked doors. A big black legionnaire smiled. Ilyanov grinned from ear to ear. His pistol was pointed between Bolin's eyes. Aretas had his Beretta pointed at Ilyanov's head. The hammer fell twice more. The action did not cycle. No cough came from the sound suppressor. The hammer just fell, clicking emptily. Bolin didn't bother pulling the trigger on the weapon he'd been given. Every round within it was a dud. He'd been set up.
Drop the pistols. And you, American, take your hand out of your pocket. Very slowly.
Four silenced Berettas were trained on Bolin. Aretas had three of his own to face. Bolin slowly took his hand out of his pocket. He had already pulled the pin from the pineapple grenade once this day. The crimp that held it in place had been pulled straight. It slid out with a flick of his thumb as his hand came out of his jacket. The pin fell to the floor of the mosque as he revealed what he had. The legionnaires stared in surprise and horror at the grenade in Bolin's hand. They were all trained soldiers. The doors were barred, there was no cover, and every man knew he was within the lethal radius of the blast. Aretas grinned with savage triumph at the sight of the grenade in Bolin's hand. Ilyanov looked askance at the ugly, serrated gray lump of steel Bolin held.
You're bluffing.
Boland's eyes were icy.
Do it.
Killing us here won't stop it.
Stop what? A grenade going off in a downtown mosque, killing 7 out-of-uniform legionnaires and an Axion direct agent, might cause a big enough stink to start a real investigation. What do you think?
I think it is an excellent idea. Do it.
Bolin and Ilyanov stood face to face, unmoving. The executioner detected something he didn't like. Ilyanov was clearly trying to figure an angle, but the Russian was also clearly willing to die.
Fuck this.
Aretas's right hand blurred. With a snap of his wrist, a switchblade came out of his sleeve. The blade clicked open as it left his fingers and scythed like a quick silver gleam through the air at Ilyanov. The cotter pin pinged away as Bolin dropped his grenade. Ilyanov staggered as the knife sank into his neck. 2 bullets hit Bolin in the chest, and the wind of 2 more hissed past his face as the giant African and another legionnaire went for headshots. Bolin staggered, but his armor held. He turned and took 2 bullets between the shoulder blades as he dove for the pulpit. Behind him, the locked and barred doors to the mosque splintered as the giant legionnaire applied his bulk to them. Bolin rolled behind the ornate pulpit. Bolin was up instantly. 4 legionnaires and Aretas were down. The doors to the mosque were flung open. The soldier dove for 2 of the fallen legionnaires. Both had been torn bloody by the fragmentation grenade. Bolin ripped the silenced Berettas from their hands.
Hey.
Bolin kept both pistols trained on the door as he examined the Frenchman. His clothes were torn, but his torso was conspicuously free of blood. His arms and legs were another matter. No soft body armor covered his limbs, and he was bleeding heavily. His face was badly torn, and one of his eyes was pulp in its socket.
You have another grenade?
Yeah.
Give it to me. I let it go when they rush us. You shoot from cover.
No. We're going out the back.
Bolin hefted the agent's weight as he put him over his shoulder in a fireman's carry. He put one of the pistols in his hand.
Shoot if you can.
The soldier palmed his second grenade and pulled the pin. He moved to the back of the mosque, keeping himself out of line of sight with the front doors. Bolin kicked the door and rolled the grenade into the room. Bolin staggered in, bearing Aretas like a sack of potatoes. A legionnaire clutched his face. Another lay still. Both were riddled with metal fragments. The room, a small kitchen, had a line of hooks on the wall for hanging jackets. The back door flung open, and a legionnaire hurtled inside. He only had time to widen his eyes as Bolin shot him twice in the chest. Concealable soft body armor was not a legion issue. Bolin stepped outside. He grunted under Aretas as a bullet hit him in the stomach. The soldier took another hit as he brought his pistol to bear on the legionnaire by the idling car. Aretas took a bullet in his side meant for Bolin's head. The executioner awkwardly adjusted his aim. Bolin's first volley shattered the man's clavicle. His second tore out the legionnaire's throat. Bolin tottered down the tiny flight of steps to the street. Piling Aretas into the back of the car, he slid behind the wheel. 3 men came around the corner. Ilyanov stood with the knife still in his neck. The African and a smaller man stood with him. The executioner aimed straight for Ilyanov. The huge African yanked the Russian to one side even as he kept shooting. Bolin jerked his head below the dash. He swerved the car, but was not rewarded with the thump of a body. Bolin swung the car around. He rose up and yanked on the wheel. His rear tire spit off its hubcap as it turned the corner.
Did we get him?
Bolin took the car back out onto the street. He drove past the 2 parked legionnaire cars, stopping to put a bullet into each tire facing the street.
You got a piece of him.
I must check him.
We need to check you into a hospital.
And you?
Bolin grimaced at his pulverized ribcage. The Legion couldn't be trusted. Someone had been willing to sacrifice Aretas. His car was shot up, and he couldn't afford to be stopped by the police.
I don't know. Maybe I'll lay low. Go get laid.
Good.
Babar took the knife in his hand and put his other massive mitt on the commander's shoulder. Ilyanov didn't flinch as Babar pulled the blade free. It had just missed his carotid artery. Cigarette reloaded his Beretta and went into the mosque. They had minutes before the city police began arriving. Babar wiped the bloody knife on his pant leg and closed it. The commander already had his handkerchief pressed against the wound.
What do we do, Commander?
Contingencies were planned for. Now we must do damage control. His access to the jungle warfare camp must be cut off. All of his intelligence assets in French Guiana must be cut off.
And?
Ilyanov, the commander, looked into the future.
And he only has 72 hours left.